Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm here today, as always, with my co-host, Allison with a Y.
Hey, everyone.
And Allison with an I.
Hi, guys.
And we are here today for our monthly horror catch-up. It's that episode where we don't watch, review, or discuss any horror movies from Netflix. We just talk about all the other horror stuff that we've been watching and reading and listening to and experiencing over the past month. So we've got a lot to talk about today, particularly a lot of books. It's a very literary month, which I like. But we're going to kick things off today with a couple movies before we get into all the books. Allison, with an I, you and I both saw 28 Years Later.
Yeah.
And we got to talk about that, right?
We do. I was so looking forward to this movie coming out.
I mean, let's just talk about the emotional experience of finding out that there was going to be a 28 Years Later at all. Like, that news came so out of left field.
Totally.
And I didn't dislike this franchise, but I'm not like a diehard for it or anything. Like, I actually prefer 28 Weeks Later to 28 Days. That's my hot take on the franchise.
Ooh, interesting.
But still, like, holy shit, insane that we're getting a sequel to this from the original director, Danny Boyle, from the original writer, Alex Garland, you know, what, 20 or more years after the first one?
I wish it was 28 years, but it wasn't.
That would be cool. But it is around 20, I think, which makes me feel very old.
I watched rewatched 28 Days Later a couple of months ago with my daughter, who she's kind of off horror. Like, she's not into it right now as much as she used to be. But I kind of hyped it up like, oh, my God, this movie is, you know, classic horror, like, you know, not classic horror in like Hitchcockian sense, but classic for, you know, horror movie lovers. And I had forgotten how old it was, you know, and I think that there was really intentional camera work that looked gritty and old. And we saw that again in 28 Years Later. Mm-hmm. But, you know, 28 Days Later was shot and it just looked like a really like low budget, which it probably was, right?
Quite possibly.
Yeah. And Cillian Murphy wasn't really anybody then, which is insane to think about. But yeah, I also could not believe we were getting another one. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah. And I think the promo around it was really, really good. Like that whole spooky, like,
recording.
Voice. The recording was so scary.
Yeah. Which also shows up in the movie. And I'm still not sure exactly what it's supposed to be, but it certainly does, you know, lend to the general atmosphere of dread. I fucking loved this movie. And it was weird because I haven't seen a Danny Boyle movie in a while, and I had forgotten how fucking like frenetic his style is. Like, there's a cut every second, it feels like, sometimes. I mean, there are slower scenes, but a lot of it is just like frantically cutting, and it's so intense, vibrant, colorful, crazy fucking visuals. And then it takes a fucking left turn into, like, one of the most tear-jerking fucking things I've seen in a while.
Oh, my God. I did not see that coming at all. Like, I cried. I was like, what am I doing? Frenetic is such a good word for it, and I had forgotten that that was his directing style, right? Because it's been, like you said, a long time between these movies. I haven't seen 28 Weeks Later in probably 15 years, you know? I didn't do that on a rewatch, but yeah, it felt like two totally different movies. Like, there was, like, whoa, where did this come from? Heartwarming, but also just heartbreaking story of family and love and survival and grief and loss. And I was like, what the fuck?
And at the center of it all is this absolutely incredible young actor, Alfie Williams. And I mean, he's a child. He's 14 years old. I don't know how at that age you wrap your head around the emotional nuances that he communicates in this movie, but he is fucking incredible. Ralph Fiennes shows up partway through. He's amazing, as he always is. It's great. And then, you know, you said it feels like two different movies almost, which it sounds like we both enjoyed that element of it. But I'm curious what you thought about the very end. And we're not going to go deep into spoilers, but suffice to say, there's a short scene at the end that is, again, a complete tonal shift. How did you feel about that?
I was like, what is this? I don't understand. I love it. I love that. I don't need to understand. I love it. It's so bonkers and off the wall. And I, of course, ran to my phone as soon as the movie was over. And there's some Easter eggs in there. So we don't need to like, it's a fairly new movie. I don't think we need to spoil it for people that haven't seen it yet. But yeah, that last scene was, it was just so on brand for Danny Boyle films, right? Like, he's just a fucking nutso bonkers director. Mm-hmm. Not so bonkers. Like, I was just like, yeah, of course. Why wouldn't that show up? Why wouldn't that last scene be what it was?
It is a very nutso bonkers moment, but it threw me off completely in the theater, especially after you have this, like, again, very emotionally cathartic coming of age story, and then just bizarre, kind of kooky action moment that ends the movie, and it's very much a cliffhanger. I did not know that there were going to be more installments coming up, and I think I would have processed it better if I knew that. But before I learned that they shot two of these movies back to back.
Oh, I didn't know that.
28 years later, part two is coming out in 28 weeks.
Oh, fun!
Yeah, or 28 weeks from when the first movie came out. And then there's going to be a third one, too.
What?
Killian is coming back for the next two.
What?
Danny Boyle has said he's going to have a small role in the next one and then a prominent role in the final movie of this trilogy. But I wished, I don't know, y'all know that I love to see movies in the theater without knowing much about them going in at this point in my life. But this was one example where I was like, I wish I had known that this was part one of three, because that ending would have hit a little better. I still think you could just cut it entirely and just leave it on that beautiful note of coming of age for this character. But that was my one complaint with an otherwise pretty fucking awesome movie.
Well, so that makes more sense, because I didn't know there was a part two and three until just right now.
Yeah.
So looking back at that last scene, okay, it does set up plot for what's going to be part two and three. I thought it just ended that way and was like, okay, I'll take it. I will accept whatever choice you made, because this movie was insane.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, 28 years later, kind of a banger. I really want to go back and rewatch Days and Weeks now, because it's been quite a while since I saw either of them. But I don't know. I remember really, really liking Weeks and being okay about Days. I'm curious to see if I like Days more upon revisiting it, but I feel like Gears might be my favorite of this series so far.
Actually. Yeah, I think so too. I agree.
Well, Allison, with a Y, and I did see a new release in the cinema quite recently. It's a little, we talked about this before we started the episode. Is it horror? There's fucking dinosaurs running around chasing people. It's a creature feature. We saw Jurassic World Rebirth, and we think it's close enough to horror to talk about for a few minutes.
Yeah.
I would not have gone to see this movie if you hadn't wanted to go see this movie, because you had seen stuff about the D-Rex on TikTok.
What's a D-Rex?
Oh, what is a D-Rex? Oh, great question.
It's a mutant dinosaur.
It's a mutant.
Oh, shit.
Basically, there's, at the beginning of this film, you learn that there's basically a whole island of mutant reject dinosaurs, effectively. Because it was like the island that they did their experimentation on.
They were like trying to hybridize dinosaurs.
They were trying, create a bunch of hybridized dinosaurs, and not all of them worked out well, but they didn't want to just like kill the dinos, so they let them continue on.
That's always worked out for them in all these movies.
Yeah, I saw the action figure of the D-Rex, and I was like, I need to see this baby on screen. I think I described it as a beautiful bulbous chunk of a diva, and after seeing it on screen, I stand by that statement.
Oh, I couldn't disagree more on that particular point. I think this thing is atrociously ugly in its design, and not in a good way. Like, it was very underwhelming to me. The movie overall vastly exceeded my expectations.
Yeah. Yeah, I went in with pretty low expectations. I mean, I'm a lifelong dinosaur nerd. Jurassic Park is probably in my top 10 favorite movies of all time.
Whoa.
Yeah. I love dinosaurs. And a few years back, Patrick and I watched the entire franchise. And so it was kind of like, I knew I wasn't going to have high expectations of this one, but I'm like, I have to, I guess, continue to see them all as long as they're being released. And I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I mean, hot take, I guess, but for my money, it's the second best movie of the fucking franchise, which is kind of a low bar to clear. But yeah, like, the last three were all absolute trash to me. 2 and 3 were of the original trilogy were just kind of forgettable. But this movie is fun. There are some awesome action sequences in it. There's enough character substance to get me by. It looks stunning. Like, it looks like it was shot on location. They may have shot it in front of a green screen, but unlike a lot of fucking blockbusters these days, it looks like it actually takes place in a place, you know, not some computer generated glop. It was kind of a blast, and I want to see more of this universe. And I think a lot of credit goes to Gareth Edwards, the director who's worked on some other amazing movies, you know, Monsters, the Godzilla film from, I don't know, about 10 years ago or so. This guy knows how to make a big budget action spectacle that actually has some substance to it and looks decent. And I loved seeing him take on this world that I also feel really strongly about. I also fucking love Jurassic Park and have been horrifyingly disappointed by the last, especially the last two before this were fucking atrocious.
Yeah, I think I gave up after the first Chris Pratt one. I was like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, that one to me was just sort of dull. And then the two after that were... Jurassic World, the second Jurassic World, took some interesting swings that I'll give it some credit for. And then the last one before Rebirth, Dominion, just an absolute waste of time, absolute snoozer, waste of a premise, waste of the original cast who they bring back and then do fucking nothing with them. But anyways, that's the entire franchise prior to this movie, which I did very much enjoy.
there were some really good high-stress dinosaur sequences.
Mm-hmm. Mosasaur and aquatic dinos in general really get their moment to shine in this. I mean, the Mosasaur figured heavily into Jurassic World, but it was in a fucking pool at the park. And this is like... Mosasaur in the ocean, and these weird, like, was it spinosaurs or something that are kind of like, you know,
symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, predators. That was awesome.
It was cool.
That was great. Right.
You guys maybe want to watch it. I'm gonna wait till it comes out in streaming.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't go in with like the highest expectations, but I think it's entertaining, and there's also some good heart to it too.
Yeah,
and also Jonathan Bailey on screen is never a waste.
I had only seen him in Wicked before this, which if I remember correctly, he has kind of a small part in. But yeah, he's got charisma. He's got screen presence. Held his own against fucking ScarJo playing Black Widow for the 17th time.
she was just effectively playing Black Widow.
But yeah, Jurassic World Rebirth, surprisingly solid. But to move out of recent releases, Allison with an I, I know you checked out a movie over the 4th of July weekend, right?
I did. I had myself a little horror movie-thon and wore all black and ordered takeout because I wasn't feeling super patriotic this year. I also think 4th of July is my least favorite holiday. I just have decided that I feel this way every year, and I'm now putting the pattern together and being like, I just don't really like it.
Legit.
Well, what did you watch and did it make it any better?
Oh my God. So I finally, I think I've tried to like pirate this movie a couple of times and it hasn't worked out for me. FBI, just kidding. I didn't do that ever in my life. But this movie finally came to, I don't know where I watched it, but it was available on Prime or Hulu or one of those that, you know, I actually do subscribe to, Hell House LLC. And this movie's been on my radar. It's shown up in different like Reddit groups that I follow, and people have, you know, talked about how it's sturdy and kind of stands the test of time. It's a 2015 movie, so it's not very new. So the premise is 5 years after 15 people were killed during a haunted house tour.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, right? A documentary crew visits the scene to investigate what really happened. So basically it follows this crew of, let's say, 20-somethings, maybe late 20-somethings, business owners and their team, and they set up haunted house attractions. And most notably, their last one was a huge success, but it was in the middle of New York City. So they choose a different location that's upstate New York. It's in a very quintessential, like, kind of Halloween town, right? Like, it's very rural town, a lot of hay bales and corn stalks and things like that. And they buy this property that has a storied history. Turns out that it's haunted, and they set up a haunted house attraction there. And it goes really, really wrong, but they're filming the entire thing documentary style. So it's very found footage, but then the movie is actually a documentary about their found footage, which is kind of interesting. But I will say it was scary, and I'm not easily scared, and it wasn't like scary, like kept me up at night, but I was like, ooh, mostly okay. Because I kind of fucking hate haunted houses. I like, for as much horror as I love and have consumed since age 10, you would think that like I would be a total like slut for haunted houses around spooky season, and they freak me the fuck out. Like, I don't want to be followed. I don't want to be jump scared at. I don't want you to touch me. I just sandwich myself between whoever I'm in the haunted house with and close my eyes and just like grip them for dear life and say, tell me when it's over. So
we can never go to a haunted house together because I do the same thing.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? It's so strange because I'm super actually like desensitized, I think, sadly, to a lot of horror like fiction stuff. But when you put that shit in a room with me, I'm like, absolutely not. Don't touch me. Don't even breathe on me. And then they always know that we're scared, so they target us. Uh-huh. Fuck all that. So I would totally recommend this movie. I mean, it's 10 years old, so I'm sure a lot of our listeners have already seen it, but the two of you, I think, would enjoy it. It's definitely worth the watch, and it's an hour and a half, which we have discussed many, many times. We love a short horror movie.
We do.
We
love a short king.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that. It's been on my radar for quite a while, but I've never seen it, so maybe I will check it out soon.
And then I think they made a bunch more after that, and I'm actually intrigued. Yeah. Like, I'm bought in now. I'm sure they're not going to be great, but I'm in.
Hell yeah. Well, that covers the film section of our program today, but we got a lot of books to talk about, as I mentioned at the top of the show. And Allison with a Y, I think we'll start with you.
Yeah, so I just listened to the audiobook of The Turn of the Screw by Henry James, a classic, classic ghost story. Very famously what Mike Flanagan's Bly Manor was based on.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. And so I've watched Bly Manor a couple times now, and I love it. It's such a good horror series. Mm-hmm. And so I've been curious about Turn of the Screw for a while, so I listened to it. And I will say, while I didn't find it scary, I also already knew the story, but it was a creepy listen. Even like the ghosts aside, just the kids in it are creepy as hell. Like creepier, I think, in the book than they even did in the show. And I was curious because like I knew Turn of the Screw was like fairly short, and I was like, you know, where did Mike Flanagan get the lore for some of the other elements of the series from? Well, it turns out they were from some other Henry James stories, is how he fleshed out some more of the lore from, like, the house.
Doing that author remix shit that he does so well.
Yeah, yeah, and did it so seamlessly. But yeah, the core of the story was, like, super spot on. Obviously, they take place in different time periods, the show versus the original source material. And one of the biggest differences for me was, so the character of Mrs. Gross in the show, one of my favorite characters. She was great. In the book, annoying as fuck. Just a doddering, like, old woman who just says stupid stuff a lot. But I enjoyed it. It's another classic to have checked off my list. It's a really quick one. I think, like, listening to it, the audiobook was only 5 hours.
Hell yeah.
So super, super easy to listen through. Yeah, it was very restrained, which is something that I like about that era of literature, is how restrained it is. There's a lot that's, like, left to the imagination, and a lot that's done through kind of through, like, vibes, you know, versus giving too much.
So. Yeah. Turn of the Screw was on my reading list of things I read for my favorite college class, Gothic literature. And I haven't read it since college, and I've also never seen Bly Manor.
Oh, shit.
So you've just inspired me to have a little journey.
Yeah, if you want to be devastated.
I mean, yeah, that's how I felt about Hill House, right? Like, completely devastating. But
even more devastating.
Oh, God. All right, maybe I'll wait. I might wait till.
So good.
That seems like a good spooky season thing to do. Maybe I'll wait for that. I'll save all my big feelings for October.
I would say it was less scary than Hill House, but more like just gonna fucking punch you in the heart.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
But it's so good.
Yeah. Flanagan. Speaking of adaptations of that book, if you liked the book, you might want to check out the 1961 movie The Innocents, which, despite its title, is an adaptation of the book and is pretty legendary. Really, really well done.
Okay.
Spooky, black and white vibes. I think you would dig it.
Hell yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Patrick, I think you have a book that you read recently to talk about.
Yeah, I recently read Eileen by Otessa Moshfegh, which was recommended and gifted to me by friend of the pod, Renee. This was a weird-ass read. It is about a young woman who has a lot of dark shit going on in her life. Her dad is an alcoholic. She works at this very depressing juvenile detention facility. She's got a lot of self-loathing, a lot of just nasty, violent thoughts towards others, and it's all her first-person inner monologue. But reflecting back from many years later on her youth working in this juvenile detention center, and the first half of the book is kind of just mostly mundane goings on at her work, her recalling these things, but always with this kind of foreboding that something really insane is going to happen. She keeps making references to, you know, when I left town, like the last day that I worked there, whatever, but you don't know what that's going to be until late into the book. It builds it up so much. And when it finally is revealed what happened to her that kind of turned her life upside down, remade her life, made her a better person, is one of the most honestly shocking twists I have ever read. The sentence where what was going on was revealed, literally my jaw dropped, and I don't react that way to much of anything. It's incredibly well written. I love a book that gets in the head of an unpleasant character and fleshes them out fully, and this does that beautifully. It is such a weird character study. There's a lot going on about women's role in society, how women are treated in society. It was a banger. And I mean, you know, maybe not quite horror, but certainly horror adjacent. There is murder, there is plotting, there is scheming, and it is genuinely horrifying, even just like living in this character's head and her psyche is extremely unsettling. So I fucking loved it. It got me right on the train to read My Year of Rest and Relaxation, which is kind of her most popular, most well-known book. And I'm really enjoying that as well so far. I cannot claim that that's horror, but Eileen is pretty solidly there. And there's actually a Netflix movie of it too, starring Anne Hathaway and Thomasin McKenzie, that I'm very much looking forward to watching sometime soon. Maybe I'll even assign it for the show. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. Allison with an I know that you recently read a book that I read ages ago, so I may chip in on this discussion a little bit, but just a little bit, because it's not super fresh in my mind. But you read Truman Capote's In Cold Blood. Honestly, you might even make the argument that that's like the original true crime book.
I think a lot of people have made that argument.
Yeah.
So I have to say, I'm going to disclaim this by saying I borrowed this from the library via my Libby app and returned it because I reached the two week limit probably 15 times. Finally fucking finished this book like a week ago. And I have to say, this is a very unpopular opinion, I'm sure. I was so bored.
What?
I was really bored with it. And I know. I didn't want to be. And it wasn't like I was bored, but I just couldn't. I just said I was bored. I couldn't keep up the excitement. It was like, you know, there's nothing better than when you're like, I have a great book to go to bed with tonight. Like, I can't wait to go to bed and read this book. And at very few points, I will say, was I like looking forward to continuing to read this book. A friend of mine was even like, you know, you don't have to finish it. And I was like, no, but I have to at this point. Like, it's a classic. It's true crime. It's Truman Capote. Like, I have to finish it on principle alone. But I don't know what it was about this. It just didn't do what I wanted it to do for me. I think like the last 75 pages, where it was really deep into the the court case, was the most gripping part for me. And maybe my interest has shifted. Like, right in the last couple of big true crime cases that I've been really following closely, I've gotten kind of most excited about the stuff that happens in court, right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. where all the juice, that's where all the goodness is. That's where you get all the details and whatever. I just like the story of these two men who murdered a family. And then it was their journey of like kind of getting away with it for the time that they did. I don't know. I don't know why it didn't do for me. I feel a little bit ashamed. If you can't tell in my voice, I feel like maybe there's something wrong with me.
She is hanging her head right now, for those of you who are only listening to this.
Patrick, what did you think about it?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not going to shame you, but I loved it. I mean, it reads like a novel. I mean, that's kind of the classic insight on it, is that it's essentially a nonfiction novel. But the degree to which he researched these guys and then also like built a weirdly close personal relationship with one of them is so fascinating. And part of the drama, part of the intrigue to me, certainly. But just his thoroughness in reconstructing this story and making you feel like you know these guys in the way that he did know, I think, just one of them, if I'm remembering correctly, was pretty astonishing to me. But again, it's been quite a while, so I don't have too many other strong memories beyond that.
Part of me wonders if I'm like such an adrenaline junkie now that I'm so used to modern day storytelling of horror or true crime where it's like action packed. Like, this was definitely a much slower burn. It was a lot of character development. It was a lot of relationship building. And I guess it just didn't hit the way I thought it would. I'm so grateful that I finished it. I will not read it again, but I'm glad to say that I did. But, you know, I mean, I had this thought several times internally where I was like, I might just be too spoiled by like modern day adrenaline of storytelling, especially of true crime storytelling. So
yeah, I can't say I've read a contemporary like true crime book ever, so I have no perspective on that, but I would not be surprised if the storytelling is a little snappier and more lurid, lurid detail per page, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, sorry, Truman Capote, it's not you, it's me.
It's very homophobic of you to not like In Cold Blood.
No, it's not. Anyway, moving on. Allison with a Y, you had another book. We're really readers this month, you guys.
Yeah, it's actually, so it's a book that I mentioned, I talked about last time because I was partway through it when we last did Horror Catch Up, and I was enjoying it enough to like bring it up. And okay, what happened was we recorded the episode, I put on my headphones to continue listening to it like immediately after we wrapped up, and within 15 minutes, my jaw like fell open from what happened next in the book. I was...
The Eileen moment.
I had an Eileen moment. Yes. I was like, oh my God. And then it... I had really enjoyed the buildup for like the first half of the book. And I was like, okay, this is really interesting. This is very atmospheric. There's a lot of interesting character development and a lot of interesting setup. And then the second half of the book was just action. Action-packed. And it was bonkers. And I loved it. It was like a paranormal take on sort of wealth and what people do to gain their wealth and how generations maintain it. So it's like this generational curse and how maybe later generations didn't create the curse. They didn't ask for it, but they benefited from elements of it and then just dealt with the curse part itself to reap the rewards, and what that did to this whole family, and whether somebody wants to finally choose to end the curse or not, even if that means that all of this wealth and prosperity, if it means sacrificing that in the end. So it was a really good story. It's The Gallows Hill by Darcy Coates. I would recommend it. I was very pleasantly surprised. Before trying to be more intentional with reading horror novels or horror adjacent novels, I didn't really expect that I would find ones that I would enjoy, because sometimes I find that those can be a little cheesy, and maybe there's like some cheesy elements to this to a degree, but I was very, very pleasantly surprised. The first half set it up really well, and the second half just knocked it out of the park. So I would recommend.
We need a rating system for books.
Yeah. Patrick, do you have another book?
Yeah, I do. I want to give a big, big shout out to a collection of short comics called World Within the World, and it's by the writer and artist Julia Groferer. It's spelled Groferer. And I've shouted her out on the show before. I'm a big fan of several comics that she's done in the past, but she recently put together, essentially it's like a rarities collection, you know, a lot of short stuff that she's done as sort of one-offs between her larger projects. And she is just such a unique voice. She has this incredible kind of spidery line. It really looks like no other comic art that I've seen before. And her stories are often have the kind of the feel of being like a folk tale that you have never read before, but it feels like you should know something about it. A lot of them take place in kind of a vaguely defined, very bleak historical past, and they just have this weird dream logic. There were a number of comics in this collection where I got through it and I was like, I don't actually know what that was about. I don't know what the point of it was, but the vibes were immaculate. There's a lot of weird sexual stuff, like sort of a lot of succubus type behavior going on. A lot of nudity in this comic, very R-rated, but all in just such an unsettling, unnerving way. A lot of feminist themes going on. I just loved it. I love her. I love her work. She's really like nobody else, and I'm glad that I picked up this collection of a bunch of weird one-offs that she did. So Julia Grofferer, World Within the World is the book. And that's, if we are rating, big view it for me, or read it, or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, we need a rating system for books. If our listeners have any quippy ideas,
yeah,
we're all yours.
I feel like we're just going to wind up falling back on view it, cue it, or screw it, because you can't beat that rhyme scheme that Stephen came up with so many years ago.
Yeah, but we can come up with something for reading.
That's true. Yeah. We'll work
there.
On it.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Well, Allison, with an I, I think you are bringing us home today with a final reading recommendation. Or maybe it's not a recommendation. Maybe it's like In Cold Blood and you're not a fan. But you read Dark Matter by Blake Crouch.
Yeah, this book kept coming up on lists of things that like horror lit subreddit. And, you know, I'm always cruising those for the newest recommendations. This one came up a lot. So I think I waited like 3 or 4 or 5 months for it.
Wow.
It was I will say, it's definitely got some mixed reviews. I think that they adapted it into a TV show. So I would be willing to watch the TV show. I think it's on Apple TV. The book was interesting. I wouldn't say it was horror. It was definitely more like sci-fi. And it dealt with basically a guy who is walking home from a bar one day after grabbing a drink with his very acclaimed, very esteemed colleague, ex-colleague who's won this prestigious award. This guy's walking home after having a drink with his friend back to his family. And his family is like, he sort of sacrificed his own scientific esteem to have a family instead. He's hit over the head. He wakes up and he no longer has a family, no longer has a wife, no longer has a kid. And he's in a totally different like life than he remembered, with strange similarities. And he starts to figure out like what happened to him, basically. So the story is kind of a cool idea. I guess this is a spoiler, but it's also like the whole premise of the book, so it's not really a spoiler. He designed this box that you can step into and step out of. And basically, when you step into it, there are infinite timelines that you can choose from, like a literal corridor of one door after another that goes on forever and ever. You can pick a door and it takes you into a totally different life, a totally different world. It might look like your city, but it's not your city. It's either burnt to the ground or it's super futuristic. And he gets into, he digs, you know, to figure out how to get back to his family, essentially. It basically goes into quantum mechanics and the idea of Schrodinger's cat, which I think is such a fascinating thought experiment. But it sort of builds the whole premise of this box and these alternate timelines around the thought experiment of Schrodinger's cat, where nothing exists or everything exists or nothing exists until it's observed. So he's figuring this out as he's frantically trying to get back to his family. And there are, you know, there's a time crunch. He's got to inject this stuff into his body that he only has a certain number of vials of to get him back into the box to then hopefully he picks the right door that gets him back to his family. And he learns along the way how to pick the doors. He's getting closer. He learns that like his state of mind as he's picking a door will determine the outcome of the environment behind the door. Really cool concept. A lot of plot holes. And as one Redditor so aptly put it, not every book is meant to be up for a Pulitzer. And I think if you go into a book like this, like not expecting it to be an award winning, I don't know. I didn't know what to expect. I liked it. I wouldn't say it's a view it or a read it or however we're doing this. it got a lot of love. It got a lot of hate. I'm somewhere in the middle, but it did not take me 15 different checkouts from the library to finish. I will say that.
Suck it, Truman.
Yeah, fucking idiot. What a loser. Oh, my God. Oh, I hate myself. But I do feel like I had two sort of not flops in a row, but I had two books right in a row that I was like kind of slogging to get through. But I did just start a book that has been on my list called Razorblade Tears, and to be continued on that one because I just started it. I am flying through it. It is such a page turner. I am so excited that I have a page turner in my possession because it's been a minute and there's nothing quite like that.
Hell yeah. Love that. Nice. Love that experience.
So I'll keep you guys posted and updated as I, as you know, probably in the next horror catch up about Razorblade Tears.
Please do. But I think that finishes up our horror catch up for today. So the only final bit of business that we have before we wrap this up is to figure out what we are watching next as we go back to our regular grind of watching every horror movie on Netflix. And it is Allison with a Y's turn to pick. What are we watching next episode?
Okay, so next time we are going to watch Vampires versus the Bronx.
Yes!
A 2020 Netflix original film. End film. And the little Netflix synopsis is three gutsy kids from a rapidly gentrifying Bronx neighborhood stumble upon a sinister plot to suck all the life from their beloved community.
I'm super stoked about this because this movie has been on my short list to watch for the show for like years now, and I still haven't picked it for whatever reason. So I'm glad that you did it for me.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch it. I've been really curious about it for a long time.
Hell yeah.
Sweet.
All right. Well, we'll be watching Vampires versus the Bronx next time on the show. Until then, visit the website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com, where you can find a list of all the episodes we've ever done, all the movies we've ever reviewed, and you can also find a link to our merch store where you can get shirts and cups and stickers and other goodies like that with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art on it. We also have all the social medias. We've got the Facebook, we've got the Instagram, we've got the Blue Sky, we've got the YouTube, and you can find us at Amoncast, Ehmoncast on all of those. Or you can go to TikTok and find us at Amon Podcast. The pod is very important if you're looking for us on TikTok, Amon Podcast. We've also got a Discord server where fans of the show from all over the world discuss this show, the movies that we watch, and all the horror that they've been watching and reading and enjoying in their lives. We'd love to have you come join the conversation there, and there's a link to that in the show notes. And lastly, please leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice. We love seeing that feedback, and it helps people find the show. All right, I think that closes out our horror catch-up for July. For every horror movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
I'm Allison with a Y.
And I'm Allison with an I.
We'll see you next time.